Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and welcome to part two of my conversation with Kim Ware, which will resume right after a word from our sponsor.
This episode of A Conversation With is sponsored by In Search of the New Compassionate Male. For more information, visit newcompassionatemale.com.
Such a change might be insane, but I gotta stake my claim way back home. Get out of bed, I shake my head and go to the kitchen. I can't cook, grab a book, try to focus my attention. I'm a mess, I'm so distressed, I can't find my favorite dress. Where did it go? There's a full moon in Scorpio, and I think you know what that means. I'd leave, but I know where to go. I'm stuck here in between. And please don't make me raise my voice again.
Kim, what a delight. I love the messiness of that song. It really shows who we are as human beings. I mean, it's like, yeah, I gotta cook, but I gotta find the, oh my God, my dresses and whatever. I just love the lifeness of it.
Thank you. It's a true story. I did forget a few words. It's so new, and I had the words, and I forgot to pull them up. So I was like midway through it, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, the part is coming, and it's so new. But I got most of them.
Yeah, there we. Isn't that, you know, this is what a time that we're living in. And I know in the previous episode, we did spend a lot of time in history. So we're going to let people get curious about those middle times and this and bring it up to cool. The present and where you are now. Because right now, this is a really evolutionary time for you.
Oh, my
this
God.
Is a time of when Kim Ware is learning and growing. And I love that so much because this is a time when I, Dennis Tardon, and learning and growing so much. I feel like I'm just in this extraordinary growth spurt. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you so much, is because I feed off of other people's learning and growings. This is how I learn, is by seeing you do it.
That's so cool. And you're so right. I mean, I feel like I've gone through so much change over really since my dad passed away the summer of 2019. Mm-hmm. That kind of just set me on a different path, really. And I would say, like, and then I ended up here, but I still haven't ended up I'm still going through it.
Oh, and, I love that. Yes. Yeah. And when you, I mean, because you spent a lot of time out there on the road, did you think that music should be the path, the one path? Because you're one of the things that I know about you, or that I believe about you, is that mm-hmm. you're very much of a yes and person. person. Rather than just being by yourself, you want to bring others along and bring others and have them. You do that with Kimonima House and all the work that you do. And I'm just so grateful to my producer, Renee Jaworski, because she introduced me to you and she said, this is someone you must speak with, him because she knows us both. She knows us both. And she said, hey, these are two people who are really in progress, where work's in progress.
We are. Yeah. And I don't remember. I think there was a question in there and I apologize.
No, actually there wasn't. That's one of the things that I will do. You know, I should have warned you that before beforehand. Fine. In a live conversation, just like when you have a conversation with one of your friends, you know, you just one person stops talking and the other person says, you know, that reminded me of, and then you pick it up and then you move it along.
Yeah, for sure. But I know what there was a question in there. So you said something about the like did I know that like songwriting would be like a path or something
you opened for the Indigo Girls, you had this opportunity, so you get this opportunity to do you take that as your shot and continue on there as your primary drive and working through do you want to do that as how, because you're moving right now, as we understand, you're moving into wanting to do therapy, which this is musical therapy. Congratulations. Yeah. I booked this session because I need the help.
Oh gosh. Now, you know, the Indigo Girls thing, I will say that definitely prompted me to, I don't want to say take it a little more seriously, but just to prioritize it a bit more. I've never had any designs on being famous with or being known from my music. Honestly, what that gave me though, that experience was such a wonderful experience. It was just it was amazing. I mean, it was like everything that you might imagine about getting on a tour of like that level, it's all that and then some. I mean, it was absolutely incredible.
What year was this?
2015.
So this was 2015. And how did they find you?
So I recorded an album. It was released in 2014 called Close to the Sun, the Good Graces album. And I recorded it with a good friend of mine. His name is Rob Dyson. And Rob had a studio in Atlanta. And at the time, Amy and Emily, they both would come there, not that often, but I think they'd come there a few times to record. Like, you know, they would often get asked to do backing vocals or something like that on like somebody else's recording where they just needed to get a quick recording and just kind of knock it out. And they would do that with my friend Rob. That's how he got to know both of them. And I think we had just wrapped up recording my album and he and I were going to do some shows together, The Good Graces, and Rob played in The Good Graces for a time also after he helped me make the album. Anyway, it's just the most like random organic thing. Emily was doing some recording with him and he shared some of the things he had been working on, including The Good Graces. And she really liked one of the songs, Cold in California. And she just kind of started talking to him. And I think as the story goes, she asked if he thought I might be interested in playing some shows with him.
Oh, really? Maybe.
I know. And he was like, and I remember that day, I was at the movies. It was in the daytime. And I had done a little bit of day drinking and I got a text from him saying that, like, hey, I just talked to him. And I was like,
what?
I was like, I need some time to process this. let me tell you the reason really that those two were such a big deal to me, because I mean, you could name about any established artist and like, that's a big deal to be asked to do that, you know, for about anybody. Right. But those two in particular, so flashback to that time when I was in college, around It was around, it was actually, it was the summer of 93.
Yeah.
My favorite summer ever. My good friend, Donna, whose name I dropped on the previous episode, yeah, that was the Hall & Oates fan with me.
Mm-hmm.
So she was kind of going through some stuff and she needed to get away from her home. And so she came to visit me and I was working that summer at Carolina Beach selling soft frozen lemonade on the boardwalk at Carolina Beach. And she was the most cushy job I've ever, I love that job. It was so fun. God. So anyway, she came to visit me and she brought her guitar. So she knew a lot of Indigo Girls songs and she brought her guitar and she visited me at work. And during my break, we would sit down on the boardwalk and she exposed me to the Indigo Girls and we would sing and play Indigo Girls songs in 93. And that taught me how to harmonize. Doing that with her was what made something click where I was like, oh, this is how you sing in harmony. And if somebody would have told me then that in 2015, I would have been like, that is crazy talk. What are you talking about? And so, exactly. I mean, they were such a big influence on, I mean, kind of like my aunt, really. It's like, sure, I wouldn't realize until later that it's like, oh, that's kind of how I learned to sing with other people, you know? And so, yeah, that was why, like, that was how that happened. And then that was why it was so huge to me. Like, it could have been about that's anybody amazing else, and it still would have been really important.
But still, but do you have this? I mean, at 72, I've over and over again, I set some kind of conscious or unconscious intention inside, and then the universe kind of like aligns or gears up to have that happen in the most extraordinary ways that I can possibly do. I mean, the thing that makes me this absurd that I would doubt that there was some power to intention, some power to focusing on something and then having the universe line up in ways that I have a metaphysical sense of that there's something that the universe is user friendly. And that I tend to ask for, I show up at the universe with a little tiny cup and it's going, well, look, bring a bucket, bring whatever you want. The only answer that I have is yes. And we go for it. So you went for it. You had that experience. What did you learn about yourself having that experience and being on there that you went, yeah, that's my lesson? Or that's some lessons.
Well, I think probably the most amazing thing about that experience for me and somebody like me is that I really was my 100% self on that tour. Ugh. And people responded to it, you know? And so I saw that, you know, you could do that even in this like really like big kind of daunting setting, you know, and that might resonate with people. I think that's where it really helped me. I also saw that like that I can do hard things. I can do big things. Like, you know, there's not, I mean, it definitely expanded the idea of just what's possible for me. But again, it's more about just like the experience of it. Because I mean, it's like you couldn't write a better no story. I mean, the first show I played with them, it was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, at the, I don't know how to pronounce, Muir Gardens, something.
Yes,
like that.
Yes, we've been there, and I mean, some extraordinary,
right?
Sculptures,
oh my God.
And I have pictures from there. Yes,
yes, beautiful setting, right? So that was the first show we played with them, and it just so happened to be on my birthday. And in the middle of our set, the crowd sang happy birthday to me. It was just I mean, it's insane, Dennis. Like,
it's just,
it like really was like mind blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm so glad that they did the Indigo Girls. They basically, that was a dry tour. Like you couldn't have alcohol backstage at all. And I'm really, really glad, because not that I've never been a big drinker, but you know, sometimes it's fun to have a drink,
like,
but before or after a show or whatever.
Sure.
But basically, because I really wanted to be my best self during that tour, I think like probably two to 3 months leading up to the tour, I cut out all alcohol, dairy, and bread. And so the not drinking during that tour also helped me just be really, really present. And I think I enjoyed it even more because of that.
God, how amazing. Yeah. How amazing. Well, bring me into the present. You, in this last year, you've had a time called fun employment.
Yeah. Yeah. Just since, actually only since the beginning of the year. So yeah. For a month and a half. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is that about?
Well, so just to be completely honest, because I like to do that. Last fall, I really felt like I was on the verge of a nervous breakdown. So I left my job at a company that I worked for for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really hard. That was largely because just moving back here, and it didn't seem like the remote thing was going to work out for them long term. And I felt like there was some writing on the wall. So I looked elsewhere, and I took a job with an agency, and a digital agency, back in September.
Mm-hmm.
A wonderful company, amazing people. Like they were really, really great. But whew, it was like drinking from the fire hose.
Absolutely.
And whereas my previous job, I had kind of got to where I could put some of it kind of on autopilot, you know, like I'd been there for 10 years.
Sure.
So this new job, and I had started grad school, right? Mm-hmm. I had moved to North Carolina to be closer to my mom. So I felt a lot of demands on me from my mom and my aunt. And it was just really, really hard. And again, I mean, I just said I can do hard things, and I can, but it was just a level of stress that it was just too much. And to the point where it was like affecting me like physically.
Sure.
You know? And so I did some thinking, and I was like, you know, we had sold our house in Atlanta and done pretty well on that financially. So I had like a pretty decent nest egg and stuff.
Yep.
And I just decided, I guess it was in November. You know, I gave them a pretty good notice. I was like, I'm going to work until the end of the year, and then I have to take some time to focus on me and my mom and my aunt and school and music and all these other things. But like, I'm a really, really hard worker, and I'm very like, if I have a really important commitment to somebody and obligations, I take that very, very seriously. And it was too much. It was too much obligations. And so that was what prompted the break. And now I'm starting to look for like some like freelance work, because like I can't just do nothing.
Sure.
But
well, all right, now when you say do nothing, you have a new album, Prose and Consciousness.
Yeah.
So that's something. You mm-hmm. also have your podcast, Quarantune.
True.
With good graces. And you do Come On to My House. So there is a lot going on already on your plate.
So much. And granted, I mean, I want to do those things. I put them on my plate, but that's something that I've learned during this time of unemployment. Honestly, like it is the best gift that I think I've ever given myself. And if I had not have done it, then I don't know what would have happened to my sanity. Like it was just too much. And now just having this flexibility in my days to structure them more the way I want to. And I mean, I'm still getting a lot done. You know, I need to get more done that I'm getting paid to do.
Exactly.
but I'm working on that.
That is where our entire economy is restructuring. We're actually getting a chance to recreate it in a way that we can. So we can do that. So in Come On to My House, could you, what was the origins of that? And, and what is the concept of that? We can make sure and have a link on the,
show to that. Yeah, so Come On to My House, it was just a really organic, somewhat spontaneous thing. So back in March of last year, it was actually March the 13th when it launched. My good friend Andy Gish had put something up on Facebook that was just kind of a loosely formed idea. She wasn't sure what it would be yet.
Sure.
But she basically was looking to start something where Atlanta musicians could stay connected.
Yes.
Because in Atlanta, March 13th, for most of us, that was the day. Like, that was the day that I went to work. I left the office pretty early and I never went back. And that was the date that happened for a lot of us.
That was
March 13th of last year was the date that like quarantine started for many of us in Atlanta. Right. And so that was also the date where people started realizing like, oh, we're not going to have shows.
That's right. Because COVID has happened and the country went on lockdown.
Yeah, for sure. And so anyway, Andy had posted something on Facebook wanting to just kind of form some sort of virtual place where we could stay connected. And
let me ask a question.
Yeah,
here.
Sure.
So I understand correctly. Austin has a music scene that they have, and Atlanta has one also, and it has its own flavor and its own, like New Orleans has one, its own flavor in that. And Atlanta has that.
Atlanta has a lot of different scenes. Atlanta was very well known for hip hop, for a while, but they have a lot more. I mean, they have some,
it's really become an amazing city. Thank you, Stacey Abrams. Listen, if you know her, please tell her, ask her to come on, please.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. So, I don't know her, but I did send her cookies a while back.
There you go. She's my hero. That Atlanta has that sense, has something, and you wanted to retain that, and y'all wanted to retain that.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, there are some really good venues in Atlanta, most notably like around East Atlanta. They have a really good like kind of indie rock scene, like the Earl and 529. And then like as far as singer-songwriters go, there's Eddie's Attic, which is a wonderful, like very established venue.
Wonderful.
There are smaller, there's a lot of different types of venues that cater to different types of music. And so, we were also concerned about what's going to happen to them. And so anyway, Andy posted, she started it kind of just as a Facebook, like a page. Mm-hmm. And that day it was again, March 13th, I left work early. I started kind of catching up with what she had done. And so I think I messaged her and I was like, hey, let's make this a group instead of just a page. Let's make it a group and ask people to do Facebook Lives like from the group. And so that's what we did. And we started with probably about a dozen of us. That was it. And I was the first person to play. I was like, I'll get on there and do a song. So I was the first person to get on there and do a song. And then a few other people did. And I would say like probably by the end of the weekend, there was a little teeny buzz about. I mean, there was maybe 30 or 40 people, right? And it just kept growing like that, just very, very organically, word of mouth. And we really never thought it would be more than just maybe 100 or so people from Atlanta, but now there's over 7,000 members from all over the world.
Oh, that is just, isn't that exciting? I mean, to be able to see something. And your podcast came out of that also?
No, my podcast actually came out of, I've done a number of podcasts before. I was kind of an early adopter of the medium, but I had not done one in a while. And it was just an idea that I thought of several months ago. I thought, again, because we're all pretty isolated, I thought as a means of staying connected with my friends that are creative, what if I made an effort to talk to one of them once a week and put it on I have a Patreon account where I post like exclusive content and stuff. And so the idea started with like, I would do it and post the video there. And then I thought, well, I might as well just extract the audio, make it a podcast, because it might be that people just outside of my Patreon might be interested in it too. And so, yeah, that's how that came about.
How lovely. So do you feel the pull from Atlanta. Can you still get that connection even though you're in North Carolina? Can you still, was it a, did you have a almost like a withdrawal from having to go from?
Yes. I love Atlanta like I never, ever, ever thought I could love a place. I mean, living there like changed my life in so many ways. And I mean, even though I've left like the corporate world, I'm really proud of everything that I did in that world.
Sure.
And because I really just worked my way up. It wasn't from like people I knew or anything. It was just from working hard and doing good work. And I never would have thought that I would get the professional experience that I got either. And so I'm really grateful for that time. But I mean, I would have never became a songwriter had I not moved to Atlanta. I would have never had all these wonderful experiences. I just know that I wouldn't have, and I owe it so much.
Look forward to me a little bit. You're going to continue to write music, continue to play music, do your podcast, do Come On to My House, and do the sharing. So wherever that's going to go, right?
I hope so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I believe it will. But you're feeling an impelling toward therapy and counseling, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I actually had that kind of in the back of my mind, Dennis, for like probably about 5 years. And I'm 48 years old and none of us are getting younger.
Nope.
And I basically like I guess after thinking about it for a couple of years, because I like to do, if it's a really, really big decision, like I have 9 tattoos, I think, almost all of them I thought about for a year before I got them. And I like to do that if it really is a big thing, because I have a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be like kind of like a life-changing thing, I want to make sure that idea sticks and I really want to do it. And that one stuck and I kept thinking about it. So a couple years ago, I started just like researching schools. And then when I moved here and found one that I was interested in North Carolina, back in the fall, I thought, well, I have a little more time now, so maybe I'll just kind of apply and see if I even get in and see if I can just start with one class, like, you know, baby steps. But I loved it. I loved the initial class, and now I'm doing 2. It's a program that's geared towards like working professionals. Even if I'm not working full time, as you said, I have a lot of
you
things
will have
that I'm
a
trying
lot.
To juggle.
Yeah.
So I can't see me doing more than I might do 3 classes a semester, but anyway, because of the pace that I'm going at it in, it's going to be probably about like a 5-year thing.
Sure.
And I'm very, you know, I'm just in my second semester, but so far I really like it. And I want to do like I want to do either a combination of like expressive arts therapy with like music, you know, painting.
Yeah.
Or like narrative therapy is something that I've been learning about. And because basically narrative therapy is all about like, we all have stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves.
Isn't that the truth?
Right. And sometimes you need an editor for your, because sometimes your story is, it's not completely accurate. And so narrative therapy is a lot of that. And then recently I took an improv class and I fell in love with that and started thinking about improv as therapy. So I'm super interested in going in that direction too.
It is. And I love the idea of improv as therapy, mm-hmm. because it gives us an opportunity. It gives us an opportunity to be able to say yes and to life. It's so easy to say yes, but, and not, but to say yes and.
For sure. And just, it's helping me be more present. Be, I think, a better listener, which is obviously really important for a therapist. But also, I think the cool thing about improv is I had a old therapist who used to try to convince me that I really needed to trust my instincts, that my instincts were good and I should trust them. And improv is all about that and trusting the other people that you're like in the group with. It's great. It's wonderful.
I love the try. All right. 2 things I want. First, I'd read me this.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I can tell you about that. So this says, She's a city girl with a country heart.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love to. I hope I get a chance. We have another conversation and talk about country and country music and some of the sure. work and what that means and what okay. that does. That. And I want a song. Play okay. us off. Play us sure. off with something that'll be fun for this delightful time with you, Kim Ware, and just this opportunity to be able to go. So.
All right.
The stage is yours.
Cool. I was just kind of checking my tuning. So all my songs, they're all my children. And so yes. it's hard to pick a favorite. Oh,
of course. I'm right? not asking. That's why no, I would not dare to say,
oh, no,
now, why do you love this child more than you love
sure.
that child?
No. Yes. But, I mean, usually my favorite is actually like whatever I've written most recently.
Exactly.
But I wanted to play this one because I think like of anybody that is familiar with the Good Graces music, if you ask them their favorite, I feel like most of them would probably point to this song.
Good.
And this song is super special to me too, because whenever I would play it live in Atlanta with the band, I would usually have my friends come up and sing the final choruses with me. And it was just like a big choir and it was amazing. So this is called 7 Year Sentence. I'm going to hell, but my friends are there, so it won't be lonely. I'm going to hell, where everyone cares, 'cause everyone knows me. Well, I'm trying to make sense of all the consequences of burning down bridges and fences we mended. I spent the last 7 years just pretending tell to get through the day, to mask all our grieving. Well, I might have lost sight of what's right and what's honest, devised my own version of keeping a promise. The hardest part.
This episode of A Conversation With has been sponsored by In Search of the New Compassionate Male. For more information, visit newcompassionatemale.com.